keep it alive through these lines I write. I keep it live cause I thrive. I might just blow your mind tonight. I'm so hyped, but it's no hype. From this height, it's direct hits on sight. I'm your type, lend me your ears to show you that there's something in me. I'm not giving up, I'm standing right here holding these days hostage, and I'll make this my year. We turning fear into love, and the love's in the air. I love doing this cause nothing compares, nothing can share that same type of feeling when you feeling them flares. They can't catch it, it's havoc. I rip to a tear, switch a scenario. My stereos, I leave them impaired. Variables start to change, and they're all in my range. I just gotta grab it, it's all mathematics. Every step is drastic, I make it fantastic. I'm trying to take your breath away, asthmatic.
This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo. This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no through the stereo. Yo, here we go through the stereo, stereo.
Yeah, just nod your head with it. So explicit and vivid. Every image is intricate, intimate. I put my all into it. No scrimmage and no rules. I'm a pro tool. Hear my heartbeat beat into the vocals. I'm so loco, lost my mind, oh no. It's ponderoso, dope so. No overdose, cause it's dope, yo. Man, this is house grown, mixed with some milestones. So I let the style flow down like the Dow Jones. Bringing it with some foul tones, letting the crowd know. We getting loud, so it's eardrum rudiments. Yeah, we bring it rude again. Move, little hooligan. Music for tuning in, full time to the 10. I'm on my clock, like I told you. I'm doing this for dreams. We pursue.
Hey, everybody, welcome back to the Anti Media Radio. Once again, with your host, Nick Burnaby, here on UCY.TV. Thank you all for being with us, and I'm definitely happy to be back. We got an awesome show in store for you. Plenty of news to be covered tonight. All kinds of things happening over the weekend, and just in general, there's just so many things going on at all times, and we try our best to keep up to date with what's going on to keep everyone out there informed as far as the counter arguments and maybe the stuff that's being ignored by the mainstream. That is indeed why we're called the anti-media, and this is why we have the anti-media radio. Anyway, anyone out there listening tonight can join the show just by calling in at 718-717-8296. Now, if you do call in, make sure to keep your microphone on mute until we address you by your area code. And make sure you keep your radio muted in the background as well. Otherwise, we'll have some audio issues and we won't be able to talk to you. That being said, we're going to go over a few news stories and we're going to open it up for discussion later on in the show. And I just want to give a quick shout out to our awesome musicians that help us with our intro music, outro music, Ponder and Excel from here in San Diego. They gave us the music for free, and it's awesome. You can go download their music on Bandcamp, Ponder. You can go to ponderrock.bandcamp.com, and you can download their albums for free, all for free, open source, just like our articles. Anyway, let's get the show on the road. DB Schwartz, how's it going, man?
Doing really well, Nick. Looking forward to being back in my hometown in, I don't know, 2.5 weeks or so. So looking forward to driving back, man, and you know, seeing everybody, and it's starting to get cold up here, so it's a great time to leave.
Yeah, I hear those Minnesota winters are brutal.
Well, dude, it's already in the 30s and the 40s, so it's going to be a cold one.
Dang, yeah, it was about 80 here today in San Diego, so it's pretty nice.
Good, I avoided all those 105 degree days, I guess.
Oh, so you're driving back, huh?
Yeah, I think I'm going to take the southern route and maybe go through New Mexico. So
nice,
we'll
man. That's a wise choice. Maybe you can see Jake on your way through. We're also joined by Jake Anderson on the call. How's it going, Jake?
Good, man. Finished having a hot dog and a plate of bacon and some
cigarettes.
Some Carl Buddings Jr. sandwich meat, the bologna. Yeah, I'm doing well.
So Jake's going to be back in San Diego tomorrow. I'm picking you up from the airport, right?
Yeah, man. I'm excited.
At least that's the plan. If I don't forget, I'll be there to pick you up.
Well, it's always Lyft or Uber.
So you're going to be back tomorrow. DB's going to be back in a few weeks. I think we're going to have some awesome fireworks shows in studio in the coming weeks. Make sure anyone listening tonight, make sure you're tuning in Wednesday and the following weeks coming up. Whenever me and DB are in the studio together, it's fireworks.
Yeah,
that's for sure.
We're talking about trying to drop a later show too. So possibly, you know, that's been in the works for a while. And then also we should put together some kind of concerts because I got already a free concert owed to me by a local band there.
Yeah, man, I'm definitely open to that. And the music is awesome as well. What was the band called again? Players Touch?
Yeah, Players Touch. So their album's going to drop and they owe me a concert.
Awesome, man. Yeah, we're going to have them on the show soon, too. They're an awesome local band here in San Diego, independent musicians. We support everyone, artists, journalists, anything independent, anything non-corporate. Screw the mainstream, man. The shit they play on the radio, I guess everyone pretty much knows that's crap. Even the teenage kids are aware of it nowadays, thanks to the internet.
When Taylor Swift was out here, she did 3 nights in a row, and she got caught lip-syncing, I guess, like the first performance. So she had to scale back her dance routines because the parents were like, I'm not paying for this shit.
That's hilarious. We're also joined on the call tonight by Manny Aguilar. How's it going, Manny?
Exhausted, but very happy, very passionate about what I'm doing all the time. You know that? I was just down there in your neighborhood, as you know. Want to make sure that I send a shout-out to DB Shorts, shout-out to Jake Anderson. Also,
hey,
I'm hoping to meet DB Shorts this time around, you know, stuff like that, you know, so.
Yeah, that'd be awesome.
I want to
arm wrestle you, dude.
Bring all those attractive activists you're always around, Manny.
I hear you, you know, so Nick B, brother, let me know when, give me a heads up on DVD and I'll drive up there to down there, so, you know, I'll work it out somehow, okay?
That sounds good, man. And you know what? Claire's also going to be in town tomorrow as well, and she's going to be here in studio for a few weeks. She's moving to San Diego, so she's going to be staying with us at the Anti-Media headquarters until she finds a place. So that's also...
Good idea.
So, I mean, we're going to have some amazing shows in store for everyone out there listening in the following weeks and days, so make sure you... bookmark us, come back, same place, same time, 8 p.m. Pacific, 11 p.m. Eastern time on UCY.tv. Or you can also find us on the radio tab on the antimedia.org. And you know, we're here every day, 5 days a week, Monday through Friday. And if you miss any of the shows, there's the show archives on UCY.tv. There's also on UCY.tv YouTube channel. You can catch all of our old shows, and it's a good way to stay up to date because a lot of times, a lot of the topics we talk about will refer back to stuff we talked about on the previous show or stuff we talked about a few weeks earlier, you know, because we're always covering these very in-depth topics that are very, you know, very much evolving over the days and weeks and the months that we talk about them. And, you know, we do a lot of predicting on this show as well. And so if people want to kind of get a feel for our predictive abilities here, because we have definitely predicted some stuff that has been going on that has come true. And so, you know, it's a good way to stay up to date with what we're talking about. Anyway, let's get started on this news, because Jake today covered a huge story, and it was viral all morning, and we got a bunch of views on it on the anti-media. But it's about meat and how processed meat, including like bacon, sausage, like ham, and you know, all this stuff that's like heavily processed, is actually, you know, the research has been out there for a long time. People have been saying this, nutritionists and, you know, the independent media and a lot of people, all my vegan friends have been saying this stuff for a long time, that, you know, this kind of meat causes, you know, is at least partially or at least potentially carcinogenic. But now the World Health Organization came out today or last night and basically said that, yes, it's, you know, this processed meat is basically as dangerous as Monsanto's Roundup, you know, probably carcinogenic, is the same exact thing they labeled Roundup as recently, and we all know that was big news as well. So,
hey, Nick, before you start with Jake, I mean, I just want to mention, just let me know throughout the show when I can say why I was in San Diego, and I also want to say something very special in Spanish and in English, because Dia de los Muertos is basically honoring our dead, you know. And this is, and I'm very frustrated how some people in San Diego thought that Dia de los Muertos is Halloween. You're disrespecting, by saying that, you're disrespecting that. But at the same time, I didn't say nothing because I believe that I just need to teach these people. They're ignorant. They weren't sure what they were talking about. They think Halloween and Dia de los Muertos is the same thing, you know. So just tell me when I can have about 3-4 minutes, okay?
Yeah, for sure, man. We'll get to that in a little bit. First, let's go to Jake, because this story was pretty big today, and it was everywhere. What can you tell us about this, Jake?
Yeah, it was big. It was. It's weird when the World Health Organization comes out and says something, because while they do warrant respect, I guess, a lot of people don't respect them, and so, because they're kind of late to the call a lot of times, and there's also so many theories on, you know, who they're getting money from and that kind of thing. So I guess when the World Health Organization comes out and says something, it's almost like if the government said maybe we're fighting too many wars or something. It's just like it's when they say something is bad, it's probably way worse than it is. And what they're saying is that the scientists that they've commissioned to look at certain studies are saying that processed meat increases your, you know, risk of cancer by 16 times, or 16%, excuse me, 16% increase of cancer per 100 grams processed or red meat. I think there's still a lot of confusion out there about that it's just processed meat, but it's actually not. It's all red meat. All red meat is showing signs that it increases your chances of colorectal cancer, pancreatic cancer, and prostate cancer. And yes, this information has been out there for a while. In fact, I cited an article on Forks Over Knives, which is a site. It's also originally was a documentary and a book promoting a whole foods plant-based diet. And they've been on this for a while, on this, by which I mean promoting, you know, reducing, if not completely eliminating meat from your diet. He, the author of this article, says that this information has actually been out there since 1907, that the New York Times reported on a 7-year study showing that meat eaters had an increased risk of cancer. There was a 2009 study with 500,000 participants, a 2012 Harvard study with 120,000 participants. This stuff is, it's fairly obvious, and yet if you listen to the mainstream media about it, they'll say it and then they'll laugh about it and act like they didn't even just say it. Like, this stuff is probably killing you. Let's go eat some bacon. I mean, that's basically what they do. Of course, I did that at the start of the show too, so I guess I'm no better than them. But
and that you know, that's what I do in real life, man, because I am a bacon eater. That's for sure, you know.
Well, and I think this is information that people should, you know, assess and parse. I certainly don't think that it's necessary to completely stop eating meat. It's degrees of risk, you know. There are people that smoke their entire lives and never have a health problem and live to 100, and then there are people that live the most healthy lifestyles and die of some weird disease at 21, you know. Like, the universe doesn't know much about parity, unfortunately, but this, it's hard, you can't ignore this anymore. I recommend you read the article, look into it, and you know, this is just one of those times you're just going to have to decide how many dice you want to roll, and how many you're going to roll, because there's no downing it now. Meat and processed meat, particularly, really increases your chance of cancer.
Yeah, man.
Hey, Jake, are you going to be a veggie starting tomorrow?
Am I going to be a veggie?
Yeah.
I'm sorry, I missed what you said. A vegetarian?
Yeah, starting tomorrow.
Oh, I mean, I'm already like a kind of a pescatarian, flirting with vegetarianism. you know, Manny, I don't believe in absolutes on anything. You know, so like,
well, fish doesn't really cause the acidic response like the red meats do, and that's really where the cancer causing starts to form.
Yeah, according to this study. Now, there's other studies that say any animal protein is bad for, actually weakens the blood cells of your heart. That was another study that was done, you know, by Forks Over Knives. It's in the documentary. Yeah, Manny, I mean, I mean, truth be told, you're right. I mean, I would like to adhere to a completely 100% vegetarian diet. I like to think that, you know, I think you can approach perfection. I think there are gradations of personal control over risk factors and whatnot. You know, there's also the environmental damage that's caused by and the animal agriculture industry, and which is actually something that we're kind of in national, if not global, denial about, really. That's actually, yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, man, definitely a global issue. We're going to get into that in a sec, but first, I want to go over to Claire because Claire's joining us on the call right now, and she's somewhere in Utah. She's on the road driving, making her way down to San Diego from Michigan. But she also wrote an article on the Anti-Media Today about another kind of processed meat by the name of hot dogs.
This was
dogs.
A bad day for meat, man.
Yeah, meat took a beating today. The meat got beat, and not in the way that we're thinking, not in a good way. So Claire wrote an article about how they did a bunch of molecular testing on meat, and they did some DNA tests, and they found that 2% of hot dogs had human DNA in them. Claire, what can you tell us about that?
Yeah, this is not a hoax, and I saw something like this before a while back, and it turned out to be a hoax. So when I first saw this report, I was like, oh, great, another hoax. But
yeah, there was one about McDonald's using human meat, and that turned out to be false, exactly.
Right, and this is not false. This is actual molecular testing of a bunch of different hot dogs, different brands, vegetarian hot dogs, regular hot dogs, all beef hot dogs, supposedly, things like that, and they found 2% of the samples contained human DNA, but there were even worse findings than that in this study. Like vegetarian samples, if you're a vegetarian, you might not really want to eat veggie hot dogs. Two-thirds of the samples they tested had human DNA in them for the veggie samples. Not only that, but also 10% of the vegetarian hot dogs had meat in them. And then, like, if you refrain from pork for religious or ethical reasons or anything like that, they found that oftentimes when labels said that the hot dogs had chicken or turkey in them, it was actually pork instead. So, I mean, there was virtually nothing really good about this study. There were some winners that did okay, and the report, it's called the Hot Dog Report, and Clear Food did the report. And there were some winners in it, but overall they found that 14.4% of all the samples they tested were quote-unquote problematic, which, you know, human DNA, yes, I'd call that problematic.
A little bit, you know, that's at least slightly, you know, concerning. I mean,
fingers, Nick, that's all they are.
Yeah,
think of what the human DNA could be. I mean, it could be anything, which I think that's even more disturbing than thinking of somebody's finger in there, really.
Yeah, it really is, you know. And I used to go to Tijuana a lot when I was a young man, and, you know, I guess I still am in a way, but I probably eaten several thousand hot dogs when I was down there. And of course, you know, the bacon wrapped ones as well. So, you know, I'm just adding up, you know.
Oh, well, there you go.
Doubling up.
Well, that's 100% pure dog, though, Nick.
Oh, wow, Nick.
But, you know, and
you know, interestingly, they said that the reason that hot dogs got their name was that around the time when they first came about, they were rumored to actually have dog meat in them. So they've kind of always been a mystery meat. It's just,
yeah,
exactly. We didn't realize mystery was quite like this.
Calientes, you know? It's, Hey, I want to say hi to Claire, our Vanilla sister. I'm happy that you're moving to California. But, you know, and it's nice you're moving to San Diego, but when you really get in with some kick-ass people, you know, you're welcome to move to Hollywood, Los Angeles County, okay? So.
I'm excited. How you doing, Manny?
Oh, I'm exhausted and stuff like that. I was in San Diego down there, you know, and doing what I do best and stuff like that. And, you know, and just, you know, so I kind of just love seeing people like you there just, you know, pushing the button and stuff like that and doing some great writing. So I take off my hat to the commitment that you are doing too also. And I'm looking forward to
hopefully seeing you in person
when you come down here, okay?
Sounds like it's going to be a party with all of us there. And I look forward to seeing all of you too. And thank you very much.
Well, you and Jake will both be here tomorrow night, so I'm sure we're going to have some good times. I got a little bit of whiskey in the cabinet there, and I know Jake likes whiskey, too, so.
What?
So, Claire.
I've never had a drop of alcohol in my life, Nick.
Claire, I'm going to let you go. I know you're on limited minutes out there. We look forward to seeing you tomorrow. Thanks for calling in, giving us that update on the human hot dogs. And we'll see you tomorrow, and hopefully we'll be in studio Wednesday night on the radio.
Definitely. And nobody eat a hot dog in the meantime. Bye, everybody.
Peace. So first I got a couple callers, and then I want to go back into some of this stuff about meat, because as Jake was mentioning, man, it's not just animal cruelty. It's not just, oh, we don't know what's in it. It's not just that these processed meats and the red meats are causing cancer. There's an even bigger issue here. And, you know, for me, it's very tough because, like I said, I'm a carnivore, man. I eat a lot of meat, you know, and for me, it's a very tough subject to confront. And I know for a lot of people out there, it's a very hard thing to talk about and really, you know, address. So I want to get into that in a little bit. First, I want to take a couple callers. We have a couple callers on the line. First, I'm going to go to area code 513. How's it going? You're on the Anti-Media Radio. Do you want to chime in on this conversation, or do you want to talk about something else?
I don't know. Are you talking to me?
Yeah, I'm talking to you. How's it going?
you're
live on the Anti-Media Radio. So we're talking about these, you know, today that some research came out that showed that there was like some human DNA in these hot dogs. We were also talking about how they also found out today and yesterday the World Health Organization announced that processed meats and red meats are probably carcinogenic. What do you think of all this?
Well, it kind of hurts my feelings because I love meat. I love eating like steaks and T-bones and filet mignon. I got into the restaurant business. I worked in the restaurant business. I love food. I grew up cooking food. So hot dogs, you know, yeah, who hasn't grown up on hot dogs? You know, it's crazy to hear, you know, that it's been going on for so long. You got cheese. You got, I could name a couple things, you know, milk, how they treat the cows. You know, I have to move away from California because that's just going to take it. I try to live healthy, but, you know, there's so much processed food out here, it's kind of hard to say, you know. Everywhere I go, everything that I can afford is from processed meats or, you know, or some restaurant chain.
Yeah, I mean, that's a great point, you know, and it really is hard to avoid, you know. In fact, it's almost impossible to avoid, like, the, you know, the sandwich meats and the bacon and all that stuff. I mean, I eat more bacon than anyone, you know, and it's kind of, you know, it's one of those things where it's like you got to weigh out those options, you know. It's like, all right, well, I like bacon a lot. I know it's causing cancer, you know. It's kind of the same thing, you know, it's kind of the same thing with cigarettes, you know. You smoke cigarettes, you know it's bad for you, but, you know, you make that decision, okay, I'm still going to smoke them, or I'm going to quit, or I'm going to cut back a little bit, you know what I mean? And that's kind of where I fall on this, you know, subject here. With cigarettes, I used to be a very, very heavy smoker, and now I smoke a lot less than I used to. I still smoke cigarettes, but I smoke a lot less than I used to smoke. You know, I used to smoke a pack and a half a day, and then one day I woke up and my chest was in massive pain, and I was like, okay, time to, you know, change it up here a bit. I still smoke a little bit here, but, you know, it's one of those things where I think people, now that the information's out there, people can start to make those choices. Because, you know, before maybe today and yesterday, unless you were really in tune with like vegan propaganda and you know, alternative nutritionist information. I think a lot of people just didn't even know this information was, didn't even know that this stuff was very harmful to your health, you know, and now that the information became mainstream as of today, now I think people have the ammunition to make those choices, and people can make the conscious choice to say no or say yes, you know, or find some middle ground in between. And I think that's what's helpful about, you know, this information being out there. It's not, you know, and as a meat lover myself, it's kind of like, you know, just as you were saying, the caller from 513 was saying, it's like, you know, it does kind of hit you personally in a way, because we're so, you know, because I love my carne asada, dude. Like, I cook that stuff up, like, once a month. We have a barbecue at my place, and we cook carne asada on the grill, you know, and it's like...
You have to have a barbecue. You have to have the barbecue. You have to have that salad. You have to have the pork. But, you know, there's ways. You know, I'm from a family where we come from farms, and we had our own, and we grew them ourselves, and nowadays, people don't do that no more. My whole dream is to try to get my own place and my own chicken, my own farm, my own food that I can grow and everything. But it's not easy for us. They make it more difficult every day. It loopholes. It make us jump through hoops just so we could be able to have what's rightfully ours. I understand there's so many things in politics, so many laws. I've been, you know, it's kind of overwhelming. But I have found that if I prepare myself on a weekly basis, I can have something healthy. I've had friends that they give me inspiration on how to eat a little healthier, make the wiser choices, and go for the vegetables, go for the greens, and find out how to prepare those, and how long it could take, and how to pre-game your whole setup so that way you already have it all cut up and ready to go when you, that way you don't have to keep on falling for the trick of that fast food. And in the long run, I think it is a little more economical. It's just hard work, that dedication and mindset. I think, and little by little, I think it could be done.
Yeah, man. That's a great point. You know, there's a lot of misleading information out there that claims that, you know, we have to have these animal-based diets in order to fulfill our nutritional needs and to get all the protein we need and stuff like that. But most of that information has been kind of debunked. You know, it's mostly like propaganda from the commercial meat industry, the factory farming industry. Back to what you were saying, man, like the whole small farming aspect of things, I think that's a very strong way of combating the control apparatus that's set up around us, you know, the monopolization of our food. We all know about Monsanto and how they control the seed game and all these factory farms that kind of supply all the meat to all the places. You know, there's only a few, there's like a dozen large factory meat farms that supply the majority of the meat to the entire country. And these guys have a vested interest in disseminating propaganda that makes it very, very unappealing to switch to a more plant-based diet. And they also lobby the government to make it very hard for people to have small farms. They try to regulate small farms out of existence. They try to regulate family farms out of existence. They make it very costly to do that kind of thing, you know, and those are the kind of things that we need to combat, you know, and these are the kind of ideas that we need to continue to push forward, is this decentralized farming idea. You know, if you are going to do meat, you know, let's do it in a more ethical sense, you know, do it in a more local sense, you know, and that's really the logic that I see starting to prevail right now, and I think it's a very constructive way of doing things. Caller from 513, thank you for your insight. We're going to have to move on to the next caller, but feel free to continue listening to us on UCY.tv. I'm going to take our next caller here. We have someone from 206. I think that's Cassius. How you doing, Cassius?
Hey, what's up, man? I'm doing pretty good.
So what do you think about all this, man? What do you make of all this news today that was just like totally beating up the meat industry? What do you think?
Well, it pretty much brings me back to the same conclusion that I've been drawing lately from pretty much every piece of news that I hear, and like my mind is on solutions, you know. So I'm thinking about how. Hello.
Go ahead, man. You're good.
Yeah, so I'm thinking about pretty much cultural solutions. I think that this culture really is prevailing. a culture of awareness when it comes to whatever issue it is, you know, meat, geopolitical truth. I kind of truth really is prevailing in this era of time, but it's only for people that have actively been seeking these solutions, or the people that are in close proximity to the people that have sought out solutions. So I'm thinking about ways to engage ordinary people in conversation that they wouldn't have normally had, and to just breach the boundaries of the people that by default were to hear something like this, you know? So my thoughts lately have been on how do we, I believe that if we live a lifestyle all day, every day, that makes the future a better place, that focuses on knowledge that we don't, most people don't focus on. I think it's an all day, every day type of thing, you know? So I think that as activists and as people trying to make the future a better place, we should just be just going to the next level, just pushing ourselves even harder to engage people we wouldn't have normally talked to about things, to make better community, to make community activist organizations that unite people, to create events like Derek Burrows, you know, with his festival in Houston, events, you know, just these, you know, original ideas to unite people and make a whole culture of this, you know? So that's what's on my mind.
Yeah, man, I agree with you. It's you know, we're not gonna make the difference here just by you know, saying stuff and you know, hope people are gonna listen. It's about changing our entire lifestyle and changing the culture that we're living to improve, you know, the atmosphere, the you know, the entire feeling that we all have right now. It's not going to just change by you know, doing these superficial things. I mean, it's got to change at the core, right? And the core of it is the culture and the civilization as a whole, you know, and that's the way we do it.
Yeah, no.
Exactly, Nick. Like, you need a lot of partners out of the way. I'm going to pick on you right now to make you an example for at least for a couple of minutes. basically, you can't be fighting climate control in Monsanto and then not realize that a pound of beef, the beef industry is killing the planet. It's killing it. I mean, it's just wiping it away. All these things that are happening are effects of everything else, climate change and all this stuff. And it's just our lands are just being wiped completely, you know, because of cattle and stuff like that. And just one sample of 1 pound of beef, when you start doing your research like I have, you'd be amazed how much water. And I'm going to say, like I say to everybody when I go to universities and talk in front of, you know, students and stuff like that, that want to kind of see the lifestyle, because being a vegetarian is not a diet, it's a lifestyle. There's no such thing as a diet. And the water that is used for 1 pound of beef could be basically sink a battleship. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I think it's something like over 600 gallons of water, well over 600 gallons of water to make 1 pound of beef. Or to make 1 hamburger, I think it was. Yeah. So it's something like outrageous, you know. I wanted to get into that here because, you know, I just recently watched the documentary called Cowspiracy. Anyone out there listening tonight that hasn't seen it, it comes highly recommended from me and from pretty much everyone. I didn't watch it until I was told by like 5 or 10 people, like, dude, you got to watch this thing because it's going to blow your mind. And I finally sat down the other night. It's on Netflix. I watched it and I was like, holy shit, how come we didn't know any of this stuff? You know what I mean? Jake, go ahead, man.
Yeah, no, I was literally just about to get into that. I just wanted to echo what Manny's, at least part of what Manny was saying, which is just a fact, which is that the animal agriculture industry is the single greatest contributor to carbon emissions. It beats out industry. It beats out transportation. It is the number one driver of emissions into the atmosphere. And that was something I actually learned from Cowspiracy, And if you go to their webpage, I mean, if you don't even have time to watch a documentary, if you don't have the time or the patience, I mean, you should watch it. But if at the very least, go to the webpage and look at their facts on what the animal agriculture industry is doing to the earth. It's seriously mind-boggling.
It really is. It really is, man. It's incredible what it's doing. It, like you said, it's the biggest, single largest contributor, you know, and like fracking and a lot of fossil fuels take a beating, and rightfully so, man. I mean, fracking, I think, is horrible for the environment, not only for the emissions, not only the environmental damage. I mean, this shit's causing earthquakes too, you know what I mean? But I mean, they're chopping down massive amounts of rainforest. I think it was like an acre every minute or something like that to like make way for cattle operations and things like that. So not only is it a cancer on the planet, but as we were just talking about earlier, it's now, you know, it's also causing cancer in us, you know? And so it's a huge topic, man. And it's again, for me, it's a very sensitive topic because I do love eating meat and that kind of thing. But after watching Cowspiracy, I have been making an effort to reduce the amount of meat I've been eating because, you know, as you said, Jake, I mean, you don't have to totally cut it out of the diet, but, you know, making an effort to decrease the amount that we consume would make a big impact, you know, and it would be a healthier choice for us. And it's also healthier for the planet because this industry is the single largest industry that is destroying the planet. And one thing I want to circle back to on this is the fact that, like, just as the Cowspiracy documentary kind of shows us, this is a fact that has been suppressed. You know, this is, you know, all these like the Be Waterwise in California. We have this organization called Be Waterwise. It's a government funded organization, and they send out all these tips on, oh, how can the average consumer just reduce the amount of water they use? Oh, put a timer in the bathroom when you take a shower, and, you know, they give you all these little tips, and we all know you get fined.
Never flush.
Yeah, don't flush the toilet when you take a shit, you know. No. but anyway, you know, there's all these organizations out there, and I'm even talking about like Greenpeace and all these other, you know, environmental organizations. They don't touch on this subject, you know, and it makes you wonder why. And the documentary Cowspiracy really tries to dig into that, and they hit a bunch of dead ends. Everyone they talk to doesn't want to talk about it. Well, it makes you start to think, okay, maybe there's some bribing going on with these environmental groups. Maybe these environmental groups are being funded by the meat industry. The government organizations, the Be Waterwise people, the Water Conservation Board in California refuse to talk about it on camera. I mean, there's some very shady dealings that seem to be going on with the meat industry and the fact that these facts are being suppressed. I mean, Jake, what do you think about that?
Yeah, no, I mean, I think that was, to me, one of the most troubling parts of the documentary is the main guy, I don't know his name, but he goes really hard at Greenpeace, and you know, literally is stonewalled. I mean, he reaches a point where they literally will not return his calls. They won't talk to him, and even when he finally does get a Greenpeace representative on camera, it's almost like she's a robot. She's just repeating these talking points. And yeah, he really makes a strong case that there's some kind of corporate collusion going on at the very least, in order to keep these facts from being out there.
Yeah. That was the most troubling part. Cassius, go ahead.
I think that's representative of this pattern that I've noticed with every single kind of organization, every economic niche, and every structure of people I've ever seen. Why is it that there are multiple types of organizations that do things like Greenpeace, but somewhere along the line, Greenpeace was the one that rose to the very top, and now it's just like this hegemonic, you know, largest group of its kind in the world. Why is it that with organizations like this, there's always just one giant benefactor? And I think that the factors that make Rockefeller was the oil, you know, you got the Industrial Revolution, different economic niches, the monopolies, you know, the DuPonts and all that stuff. So why is it that as people we allow it to get to this point where one organization is just the dominant organization and this whole niche or this whole thing. You know, I think it really boils down to how we live our lives and our personal choices. And there's, of course, you know, a lot of people that we just simply can't just get this truth to, and they just won't be open to it. But, you know, there are a lot of people that are just not so solid one way or the other. And if we just talk to them and we just, you know, made our culture even more vibrant and lived this culture that makes the world a better place, this culture of awareness, this culture of thinking deeper, if we just integrated that further into culture, I think that's the best chance we have at making anything better, you know? So I want to have, I'm starting a neighborhood activist organization pretty soon, and I'm going to meet up with some other Sacramento activists, and I'm going to just start, you know, doing more things, you know? I'm going to start talking to more people that I wouldn't normally engage with. And, you know, maybe we'll hold documentary screenings sometimes. I want to see a flourishing paradigm of this kind of thing, because I think that this cultural change is our best bet to change anything. You know, it's a fundamental... why is it that the articles that are the most important get the least views, and the ones that are the least important get the most?
Yeah, you know, man, you know, you make a great point there, man, and I think that that's what we need is more community-oriented, decentralized organizations to take on and head on these kind of all these major issues, including environmental issues like Greenpeace supposedly is addressing. And don't get me wrong, they do some good work and they do some other work that isn't so great. But, you know, the thing is that I think that it's all about control. And if you can make you know, one organization be the umbrella kind of for all environmental work, and it's Greenpeace, well, then if it's just one organization, it's very easy to control, you know? And so the whether we're talking about political interests or corporate interests or geopolitical interests that are kind of trying to control the narrative, well, it benefits them to have just one group that dictates the entire kind of environmental activist cycle or whatever, you know, whatever topic we're looking at, it benefits them to have just one singular voice that says, oh, well, the main issue that we need to talk about here is just fracking or whatever, you know, and we're just going to ignore everything else, including the animal agriculture, which is the single largest polluter in the world. So it's easy for them. It benefits them to have just one group that they can just kind of help control the narrative with. Even if it does damage maybe some of their interests, it doesn't damage their other interests, and they can kind of use that as like a controlled opposition group or like just damage control type of thing. And that's why we need to be wary of these very big charities and things like that. I know there's been plenty of news lately, you know, there's plenty of news about like, you know, the Susan G. Komen Foundation and, you know, everyone wearing pink and all this shit.
And ironically, the Ronald McDonald House was like the most legit.
yeah, because McDonald's stopped funding them. McDonald's set up the Ronald McDonald House, and then we had an article, Kerry wrote an article about it last week. Someone decapitated a Ronald McDonald statue at one of the Ronald McDonald houses, and it turns out that like
it was the Hamburglar.
Yeah, the Hamburglar. it turns out McDonald's set up this whole charity thing as like, you know, basically a PR stunt. I mean, what else do you what more would you expect? But they don't even really fund it. It's like their own customers that actually fund this thing. And you know, the Ronald McDonald House isn't even that bad of a charity. There are a bunch of bad ones out there, like the Susan G. Komen Foundation isn't very good. And most of that money doesn't go into breast cancer research. It goes into funding, you know, just last year there was a viral article about how they set up. They started painting fracking drill bits pink to support breast cancer research, and it's like, oh my god, this has got to be satire, but it wasn't, unfortunately. But yeah, now the term has been coined pink washing, and you know, it's very convenient for organizations like the NFL to wear their little pink ribbons and their pink socks out on the field, and it really doesn't do shit for breast cancer research, because really most of the research is flooding into the pharmaceutical industry. It's not going into preventative measures and things like that, and that's where I think we need to look more to prevent cancers. And you know, like today, finding out about the processed meats. You know, if we really wanted to talk about breast cancer, well, shit, we should be helping women find alternatives to processed meats. You know what I'm saying? But
you know, we got to be wary of these big, giant nonprofits or charities or whatever, because the majority of them are basically, most of that money just goes into their bureaucracy. It doesn't actually go to the cause. It doesn't go to helping people that are inflicted with the things that they're trying to help, and it doesn't go into the research. And many times it just doesn't go into the right research. It goes into research, but not into the correct research. It goes into, you know, the pharmaceutical industries and that kind of thing. But yeah, I mean, it's just, there's so many things out there. And Cassius, you made a great point, man. It's like people need to go back to the community level. That way there's more transparency, more accountability. I think that's, personally, I think that's the way to go. Now, now that we're done with this meat thing, we got to get into some of these other topics. First, I want to go over to Manny because Manny's got some stuff to talk about first, and then we're going to go into some geopolitics. As always, you could always count on us on the Anti-Media Radio to go into geopolitics because there's always news about that. But Manny, I want to hand the mic over to you for a few minutes. Go ahead, man.
Yeah, I just want to share, obviously, I didn't go to San Diego on vacation. I went down there in City Heights where all the real stuff happens for all San Diego, the police terror, you know, and stuff like that, and basically really, you know, hit. I mean, there was cops all over the place, CHP, I mean, it just was crazy, you know, stuff like that, and of course, Michael Buell was out there too, and stuff, and we're really chanting, and just the stories that I heard, I mean, I was blown away, I mean, I was in tears. A lot of stuff, passionate, but I'm very, you know, proud of how many people showed up because I think that's important to be their presence and stuff like that, you know. And so the mothers are just talking up there on stage and stuff, and I just, but man, what a big turnout we had up there. I mean, it was just fascinating and stuff like that. And then of course on
this
Friday,
this was for the National Day Against Police Brutality, right?
Yeah, that's correct and stuff like that, you know. And then Friday, we were down there, approximately 60 people. We were down there in supporting our brothers and sisters in their cause, you know, for what's going on in Palestine, because it's basically the same thing, you know. The United States is giving Israel money to, you know, bomb and kill people in Palestine, and they're doing the same thing with our narco gobierno and stuff like that, you know. So that just basically blows me away. Then in the neighborhood of Michael Buell in Fallbrook, California, I was really delighted to have seen 10 artists from around the United States promoting their artwork and educating people on what all these celebrations are all about, what the movement is really all about, and educating people that it's okay to have other people in, you know, Fallbrook, not just, you know, vanilla people, you know. I mean, it's okay, you know, it's... And when I spoke to a lot of those people, you know, that are allies in the vanilla, you know, basically ranks, is, you know, I tell people that I think diversity and equality is very healthy, you know, and stuff like that. And you need to embrace it. So people from all walks of life and stuff like that showed up there and all that. But what I want to say is that I was very moved by the Día de los Muertos. Because two things, we're educating people on, you know, people think it's Halloween. You know, Latino Halloween, you know, and I have to educate people. I took it very hard, obviously, because as people that know me, you know that I lost my mother by drunk driver, you know, July 2nd of 87, lost my dad by drunk driver March 5th of 88, and then March 20th of 1997, I lose my brother by drunk driver, so that's really hard to swallow. And Día de los Muertos is very, you know, for people that don't know what Día de los Muertos is we're actually honoring our dead people. You know, and stuff like that. And we're honoring how they live, not just how they, you know, passed away and stuff like that. So I think that's, you know, very important. And then, you know, we did a climate, you know, basically education down there in Vista at the library, you know, and stuff. And the artwork that happened, it was at the Fallbrook Library. And then at Centro Cultural on Friday night after the Palestine thing, it was the lucha that the Zapatistas are going through. And so there was a book that was written, you know, so that can get educated on what the Zapatistas are all about on the sister side. We know what the men are about, but the sisters wanted to say, we need you to listen to us, who we are, because people think we're secondary and stuff like that. And so my comment that I made in front of the panel is, any man that thinks that the women is in the back, you know, is either in denial or it's not paying attention, or it's got a big ego, because women have always been in front of the struggle. I don't care where struggle you have, women have always been the backbone in front of the struggle, stuff like that. So, you know, so I just wanted to share that out. And also in Spanish, I want to say, muchas gracias por escuchar el show de Time Media, a toda la gente latina, con los reportes de Claire, de, you know, Nick Burnley, hablando también con el hermano TV Shorts y también con los reportes del hermano Jack Anderson. Muchas gracias. So, there we go.
Muchas gracias.
Thanks, man. And of course, Manny, thank you for all the work you're doing out there, man. Always out there on the streets, putting in the work on
seriously,
you know, with the activist, dude. Like, much appreciated.
Much love.
Powers that be.
Love your passion.
You know, and you know, you bring up the Palestinian issue, man, and that's always a very sticky subject because the U.S. obviously has this very special, quote unquote, special relationship with the Palestinian or with the Israelis, and you know, I think everyone's pretty much aware that there's a pretty bad situation going on over there with Israel and Palestine right now. They're in a situation where it's very escalated and it could turn into another war. And the last time around, a bunch of, you know, 600 kids were killed last year in the Operation Protective Edge by the Israeli military. And you know, the U.S. taxpayer, you know, all of us people that live within the borders of the U.S., we all pay into that fund and we give all that money, at least $3 billion. That's what's on the books. It's probably a lot higher to the Israelis. And they use that money to, you know, do some pretty awful things. They kill people. They arrest people. They indefinitely detain people without any charges. There's no due process for the Palestinians. One article I shared from The Intercept over the weekend on my own personal Facebook page was about how the Israeli military shot and killed this guy. And, you know, he just happened to be a Jewish guy that was kind of had a tan or whatever. Israeli police shot a terrorist today. And then they take the guy in, take him to the morgue and stuff. And they're like, oh, shit, he's a Jewish guy. He's an Israeli. And they're like, oh, sorry, we take it back. He wasn't a terrorist. You know, he was an innocent victim and it was an accident, you know. And so it really goes to show the real hypocritical way that people are labeled over there. And even here in the U.S., you know, and they want to label anyone that's brown as a terrorist that does anything violent. And anyone that isn't, you know, it's a whole different scenario. In Israel, it's being just blatantly out in the open, you know, now. The Intercept covering it, it's a relatively mainstream publication. Yeah, it's run by Glenn Greenwald and stuff, but I mean, I'm glad the stuff is coming out. It's really sad that, you know, innocent people have to die, whether the Israelis or Palestinians, in order to spread this message. But, you know, all of us in the U.S. are kind of on the hook for this because we're all paying into the system. And we've got blood on our hands because the money that we're paying in is killing people, you know.
And we're hopelessly stretched thin, Nick. That's what I don't think people understand. It's almost like a miracle that something hasn't happened yet, as far as how stretched thin we are.
Yeah, you
know, that's something that I forget too.
And then, you know, on further into the Middle East here, we got a story on the anti-media. We republished it from a partner of ours at Common Dreams. We just approved an $11 billion deal to sell combat ships to Saudi Arabia. And, you know, as everyone is likely aware, Saudi Arabia is a pretty awful dictatorship. It's a monarchy. They do horrible things. They are really bad on human rights. They crucify people for protesting. They don't allow women to vote. They don't allow women to drive. They are just horrible on basically everything. Yet we are like their number one ally, you know, and it's just the strangest thing, you know. On paper, it's like, okay, well, you know, the U.S., you know, we spread freedom overseas, and that's why we fight these wars. We're spreading democracy. We're saving people from dictatorships. But then we go and sell $11 billion worth of warships to Saudi Arabia. That is a horrible dictatorship. And they cut people's heads off at record rates. They've cut more They've decapitated more people than ISIS. And, you know, that's pretty bad. Cassius had an article out today about how one of their princes just got caught trying to smuggle 2 tons of an amphetamine into over in Beirut, and it looked like he was trying to smuggle it, you know, probably first into Saudi Arabia, but, you know, there's a good chance that those drugs were going to end up in Syria to fight alongside of our allies over there, which it's a very gray area. I mean, many people were speculating today that those drugs were destined to land in the hands of ISIS. This is the favorite drug with ISIS, you know, and it's very not, it's very much like what the Nazis used to use with their soldiers, and we all know that Hitler was on it too. But we found out recently that the Nazis were doping up their soldiers because one, it kills the appetite, so then you don't got to deal with the food, keeps your guys awake all the time, and it you know, gives you stamina and alertness and all this stuff. But you know, these are the very similar drugs that the Nazis use, and now the Saudis, obviously, now we find out today with this guy trying to smuggle it in, he's a Saudi prince. You know, and they're giving these drugs to the jihadists. I mean, so they're basically using Nazi tactics with these jihadist groups like ISIS and the other groups that are out there trying to overthrow the government of Syria. So this is just really, really crazy information, man. What do you think, DB?
I mean, you hit it all on the head already there.
Yeah, man. Like, I think that it's crazy that it was literally 2 tons. I mean, damn, that's a really big number, too. But I also thought about this possibility. I've noticed that a lot of the people in places like Iraq and Syria, people who have survived incomprehensible trauma and all the events of the last 20 years, these people are so incredibly strong. I don't know what can break the willpower of those people, some of them. And then I thought about how the Afghani opium trade is kind of protected, you know, in Afghanistan by the U.S. military. And I thought, if none of that war or trauma or any of that stuff could break a people, and they could just still fight strong against ISIS, against U.S.-backed forces, could drugs break them? Because knowing how meth ravages America and stuff like that, I can't imagine what it would do to that culture. Would they
it's
be stronger against it?
It's been used before in the Opium War, and they got their central bank in, and the rest is history. So there you go.
Oh.
Yeah. Well, yeah. You know, they've back in the day, Britain fought to open up opium trade into China.
Oh, of course.
And yeah, man, and, you know, drugs are a weapon of war, I think, as well. It's not just bombs, and it's not just, you know, the typical stuff you think of when it comes to war. I mean, the one of the age-old tactics is rape and pillaging and sex crimes and things like that. I think drugs are a relatively newer development. It's not brand new, but it's definitely a newer development in the wartime. And, yeah, that's a great point. I mean, maybe they were putting these drugs in there to demoralize a population and take away their willpower and things like that. It's definitely
Remember in The Men Who Stare at Goats, there was a project where they were going to bomb Beirut with bombs that were going to turn the soldiers, you know, into these raving homosexuals, and they'd stop fighting. I don't know if you've ever read the book, but they get into all kinds of crazy shit.
Yeah, and that's actually real. I mean, that was definitely. They also talked about using that in Afghanistan. They're getting really creative with these wars because the long time, you know, propaganda wars are kind of failing. People aren't buying the propaganda anymore. It's like, oh, we're gonna come save you from your bad government, and we're gonna replace it with an even worse one. I think people are kind of like over that idea. So now they're resorting to these much more creative ways of going about pursuing these wars and demoralizing populations and things like that. And it gets worse and worse. It's even more sick. You know what I mean? Cassius, I'm not going to be able to get to you because we're coming up to the end of the show here. But we'll try to continue this conversation on Wednesday. Make sure you tune in. It's sure to be a action-packed show. We're going to have Jake and Claire in studio Wednesday night. So make sure you guys all tune in here on UCY.TV, same place, 8 p.m. Pacific, 11 p.m. Eastern. The Anti-Media Radio, 5 days a week. Thank you all for tuning in. Peace out.
Yo, here we go. Stereo.